This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kennison and Noel Lim. 6 o'clock in the morning, Friday the 26th of March, and we just have another couple of hours before the weekend, guys. How are you feeling today?
Well, thank God it's Friday.
You could have asked me that question and I could have answered for Noel for sure. 100%, I think I could have predicted the first 5 words that she would have said.
Yeah, Noel, we all know that Noel is always very excited for the weekend ahead.
Do you have a watch, a dedicated watch on your wrist that counts down to the weekend when Monday starts?
Oh, that's a good idea, actually.
Present idea for future guys.
Okay. My birthday is coming up, yeah, so you can buy that for me. The team can buy that for me.
Roshan, how about you?
I am feeling good, I think. I'll decide that in a little bit. Give me some time to kind of digest the macroeconomics around me. I'm just saying words at this point.
I was going to ask if you hadn't woken, if you had woken up already, but then like, oh, okay, there's a lot of words.
The Nespresso is flowing through my veins right now.
I know this will wake you up. The next topic that we'll talk about.
Yes, really? Indeed.
Yeah, mysterious.
Okay, but before we get to that, let's take a quick look at what we're going to be talking about in the 6:30, Noel.
Right, the Swiss Chanel and also Tokyo Olympics as well. Something about North Korea. What have they been up to?
Yeah, the Tokyo Olympics will be very interesting. Whether it goes, will it happen or will it not? Of course, before that, we've also got another story. We'll be taking a look at how to end an awkward conversation. We could have used that a few minutes ago when we started this.
Awkward? No.
But, you know, I do want to shout out another thing. Today on The Breakfast Grill, we've got Rolls-Royce Motorcars on the show. Koo Soo-Jong will be speaking to their Asia-Pacific Regional Director, Paul Harris, mm-hmm. which will be interesting because in light of the COVID-19 pandemic and the disruptions to everything, luxury did well, all said and done. I think relatively speaking to the rest of the economy, Lamborghini posted some numbers earlier. They made more money. They didn't sell as many cars, but they made more money on customizations. It'll be interesting to see how Koo Soo-Jong takes this conversation. That's happening, of course, at 8 a.m. with one of the two biggest luxury makers, car makers in the world.
Yes. In the meantime, if you want to weigh in on any of the conversations we have this morning, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, though, we're going to be taking a look at Roshan Kennison's favourite subject, which is tax reliefs and what you should be paying attention to this tax month. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. 6:07 a.m. Friday the 26th of March. And of course, we are in the midst of tax month this month. And Ringgit Plus has an interesting article looking at everything you should be claiming for income tax relief this 2021 when you do file your taxes. I mean, if you've already filed them, then let's hope you have claimed what you needed to claim. But Roshan, why don't you take us through this?
I'm not going to go through all the tax reliefs here, but you've got some of the highlights, right, that you want to be paying attention to. But first and foremost, we've got to make this very clear. This is for the year assessed 2020. You file your taxes for 2020 in 2021, and you've got till the end of April to do your e-filing. I think if you do your physical filing, you have a few... you have, I think, until mid-May, if I'm not mistaken, but I'm not really sure because I'm focused on the e-filing part. That's the simplest way to get it done. And you got till the end of April to do that. You know, so you've got some of your big things, right? You got your automatic individual relief of 9,000 ringgit. You've got medical expenses for parents, which is about 5,000 ringgit, or it's split up 1,500 each for one parent, for one mother, one father, if that's something that applies to you. Education fees in Malaysia, you've got a relief of up to 7,000 ringgit. You've got medical expenses, medical reliefs as well for, I think, serious diseases, about less than 500 ringgit. You've got treatment for self or spouse, about up to 6,000 ringgit in reliefs. But I think the one that a lot of people pay attention to is the lifestyle reliefs, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got 2,500 ringgit in, you can offset up to 2,500 ringgit from your taxable income for reading materials, electronics, internet subscriptions. And I think the electronics is what catches a lot of people's attention. And last year, there was an additional 2,500 for computers, equipment, things that people needed to buy for the work from home situation. And of course, the tourist accommodation stimulus, right? The 1,000 ringgit you spend if you if you travel, spend money on local tourism.
What I'm told that people tend to file in quite last minute. They submit it quite last minute, whether online or through the physical channel. Well, I think, you know, I think it just makes sense to just do it as soon as you can, because it's one of those things you just want to get out of the way, right? You know, filing taxes.
Listen, Noelle, a lot of people procrastinate. We're not you. We don't do it as soon as it opens.
If this helps, okay, what I've done for many, many years, I think maybe since the time I started working, as soon as the EA form comes out, you just send in your taxes, you submit your taxes, because that's your marker, right? Immediately the HR send you the EA form, then just straight away in the weekend just send the taxes in, and then also you get your refund earlier if there's a refund, or otherwise if you top up then you have to top it up earlier. But you know, just some items here I just want to kind of point out, right? Education, you can claim up to 7,000 ringgit, but just bear in mind this is only for a master's program or a degree, and I personally feel that this criteria should be expanded, because when we talk about continuous learning, right, not everyone's going to do a master's and a degree each time we do continuous learning. So I think shorter courses should be also included, especially when you're asking people to become more digital and all
training,
that.
Training, right, essentially.
Yeah, and people may want to just take out money from their own pocket and just, you know, take up a data science course, for example. That should be allowed. So that's education and some of the little maybe things that tend to get overlooked, like annual checkup, that I think that can be quite useful. And also, like you said, I think internet subscription as well as the telco, purchase of telco items.
Yeah. You know, a lot of times these reliefs are ways for the government to kind of steer behavior as well. So like insurance, there's a reason that there's quite a few reliefs with regards to insurance, because Malaysia's insurance penetration rate is very, very low. I think it's 30-40%. And for life insurance, if I'm not mistaken, and that number doesn't take into the fact that there are people who double up on the insurance policy. So that penetration rate could be much lower than that number. But more importantly, though, on that note, though, there's a lot to cover when we talk about tax and tax reliefs and taxable income. Yesterday, I had a fantastic conversation with Tanamale, Managing Director of Tanas Tax Consulting Services, and we discussed what income is taxable. Long story short, all income derived in Malaysia is taxable. If you made 100 ringgit on the side, that is taxable. The IRB has a claim to that, but it's of course on you to declare that income. So we discussed this, as well as whether profits from share trading are taxable. Long story short, if you're speculating and trading, it is. If you're investing for the long haul, it's counted as capital gains. I'm not explaining this as well as Tanya did, so check out that conversation. That's Ringgit and Sense, the BFM app, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Really, really good conversation.
But speaking of, you know, directing behavior, right, the fact that taxes are used to do that, the other thing that the government introduced in February of last year additional reliefs if you if you visited a tourist attraction in Malaysia between
ringgit,
March
right?
and December. Yes, it's 1,000 ringgit. But there were some caveats. So it's to qualify for this, it's like your stay must be at one of the accommodation premises officially registered with the Commissioner of Tourism Malaysia. So you can check out MOTAC, the Ministry of Tourism, Arts and Culture Malaysia website. It does have a searchable list to if you want to check out whether your holiday stay is eligible for these income tax reliefs. And it was one of the government's multiple measures to try and kind of revive our ailing tourism sector, what with borders closed for so much of this year, not just internationally, but as well as interstate. It's certainly been a 2020 to remember. And one wonders what other measures the government will continue to introduce, because the thing is that COVID-19, the effects of this pandemic aren't going to be disappearing really anytime soon.
Yes, there's always that ongoing conversation, that bigger conversation, whether we should bring back GST, for example, you know, scrap the SST and bring GST back. Well, these are some conversations that we continue to have to keep, you know, monitoring, as well as whether we should raise income tax for the very ultra rich people.
Well, let us know what you think about this. Have you filed your taxes yet? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. We have some messages coming up, and then how to end an awkward conversation. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Roshan and Noelle. That was Ray LaMontagne with You Are the Best Thing. But, you know, as we head back into CMCO and perhaps are starting to socialise a bit more, we do encounter people who are definitely not the best thing that ever happened to us conversation-wise. And the question is, you know, when you are in that conversation and you maybe want that conversation to end, how do you go about it in a way that doesn't necessarily offend the person that you're speaking with? We're looking at an interesting article about this in The Atlantic. Roshan, what are your thoughts?
So I put this into practice yesterday because I had a little bit of a, a little event. And I, you know what? I forgot so many things. I forgot how to be social with people. When you go to an event and, you know, you meet people and you're like, what do I do?
How was COVID for you?
When do I bring my business card out? Oh wait, did I bring my business cards out?
I know.
Where
what's
are
that?
My business
what's
cards?
That? That's I know, in I, the museum.
I fished out business cards from a jacket that I haven't worn in about a year, and I was like, oh, these are what my business cards look like again.
Yeah, so it was like I just saw a group of people, and I was like, wait, how do I approach people again? Like, how do I walk up and do I just say hi? Like, no, I need to find someone I know. Right. That's how it's done. You know, it's like riding a bicycle. You slowly get back to it. Sometimes you fall off and hurt yourself, but you kind of get into it. But this article is particularly interesting because you get into the groove of conversation and then you start getting into those awkward bits where you start trailing off into the nothingness, the void, but you're still talking because both sides are like, shoot, how do we manage this? Like, when do we end this conversation? And it's such a coincidence because in my head I'm thinking, how do we move away from this topic, or how do we end this conversation? When is the time to end this conversation? And then slowly the tips and the tricks start coming back out, right? But like, oh wait, you know what? This has been lovely. We should catch again. So I need to go and meet someone else, or oh, I've got something to get to, or just silently move away, right? Which is the most awkward and most not ideal of the lot, right? Where it just feels rude to just walk away from someone. But I've noticed that things sort of die also, and that's also really weird.
My first test of meeting strangers will be this Saturday when I'm going to attend someone's wedding. The only person I know is the groom. So that's going to be
you can tell me how that goes.
A test of awkwardness, getting back into real life. Anyway, I think, yeah, from my experience, it feels like when the energy starts to taper off, I think both parties kind of get it that, oh, mm-hmm. we need to just move on with our day. And it seems to just end quite nicely there. And I find myself usually saying, oh, well, take care. I'll see you. I usually say see you if I kind of know I will see that person again or speak soon. So because I don't like the superficial politeness, right? So I'm quite clear about that, you know. But take care is obviously, I think, quite a safe thing to say to anyone. And I think the awkwardness usually comes when maybe you don't know the person, or you find the person too talkative, or maybe even condescending, or saying things that, oh, you know what, I rather not want to process this information. And, you know, they may be filling up time, conversation time with you with conspiracy theories that, you know, you're like, right, okay, you know, I think somehow I feel like I need to have a more useful conversation.
I have definitely been in that position.
Yeah, so, you know, it's just one of those things you feel like you just need to get yourself out of that. So it's how do you end those kind of conversations?
So right? With condescension and conspiracy theories, I have no issues. I just walk away from the conversation.
Full stop.
I don't feel a need to make the other side feel like they're not boring, or I don't feel like I need to protect their feelings. With people I actually like and had a good conversation with, I want to end on a polite note because I want them to not feel like, oh, did I bore this other guy? If you start spouting out conspiracy theories or start being condescending, I'm just going to say, oh, thanks. It was a pleasure meeting you. I'm going to head off. Mm. Oh, what are you going to do? I don't know. I'm just going to meet someone else. Like, you know, like I have no qualms doing that. But it's the other people.
I remember
right?
this when you say this to me.
No, I will never say it to y'all. I also never say it to y'all because I know y'all personally. But there are do's and don'ts, right? And also when you're in conversation with people you don't really know, to be people you know, the conversation doesn't really, even if it gets awkward, you can be honest with the other person, or it's just like you're not afraid of the awkwardness because you know them. It's the people that you are sort of interacting with, the mutual friends, that you're not sure how far to take that conversation.
The most difficult ones I find are always the relatives, especially the distant relatives who maybe you're meeting for the first time, and you know there's an expectation that you should be polite and interested in their lives, and sometimes they're not very interesting.
Your mother's brothers, sisters, uncles,
yes,
cousin-in-law.
You know,
who that cousin.
Twice removed. I have found myself in a position where sometimes I feel like I'm conducting an interview, you know, even though we're not obviously on the breakfast grill.
Oh, I ended up doing that yesterday.
Yeah, because I'm just like asking questions constantly to keep the ball rolling, but yeah. I'm not getting anything back, you know? And in that instance, it's very difficult to find that nexus between the three things that this article points out, right? Ending an interaction, being honest, and yet being considered polite. Because you also, you know, in that situation, you can't tell the person, look, I'm bored, I'm going to walk away. So this article gives a good tip, or like the most powerful phrase that you could use, which will be, listen, I'm going to let you go.
I don't like that phrase. I'm like, who are you to let me go? Like, seriously? Like, that's not polite at all. No, I read this and I was like, no, maybe it's a Western thing, but I don't like this phrase.
I have used it.
Maybe what was the TV show on Netflix that was so popular? The British people doing Bobatons? No.
Bridgerton.
Yeah, I mean, the British have their own style, right? Of telling you to bugger off in the most polite way. I think that's the British style. But one thing, though, what I take away from this article is actually don't discount anyone that you meet, really. Yeah. Mm-hmm. As long as they're not condescending or they're not getting into all this conspiracy theory mode. You know, sometimes some people are really quiet and maybe just being comfortable with the silence.
So, being comfortable with silence is important. And also just like, I mean, you gotta feel the conversation, because sometimes both can be very interested, and then there's just a natural lull, and that's when you can just let it die in a polite fashion where both can walk away from it.
Or just being comfortable with gaps and silences before saying,
100%.
That, oh, you know, maybe we should need to move on.
Well, let us know how you end awkward conversations.
Was this conversation awkward for you?
Maybe you can let us know that too. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. We're heading into the 6:30 news bulletin, and to take you there is Chic with Would You Be My Baby, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Are You Gonna Go My Way by Lenny Kravitz, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanison and Noelle Lim. So we are turning our attention to some interesting international stories this morning. First on our list, of course, is the container ship that is blocking the Suez Canal. So it's showed no signs of budging. This is the third day that this has happened, and it's now forcing container carriers, other vessels to weigh whether or not they would be better off conducting their voyage around Africa. So that's around the Cape of Good Hope, far, far out of the way. And it's certainly going to have repercussions on global trade. And this, you know, some analysts are saying this could destabilize the existing flows of international trade around the world.
Yeah, for the container lines, you know, they account for something like 80% of global merchandise trade, some of the containers that use this route. So a prolonged bottleneck between Europe and Asia obviously throws off ship schedules set for months in advance. So importers now, you know, are struggling, right? What do they do? And a lot of these importers are like automakers, for example, and they run on this like just-in-time inventory, right, where they rely on very tight schedules to get their products. They don't stockpile so easily. And so this is obviously an awkward decision, and it has some, obviously, many repercussions on the value chain. And speaking about, you know, doing that detour around South Africa, I think it will add something like 6,000 miles to the journey and something like $300,000 in fuel costs for a super tanker will be incurred just to deliver Middle East oil to Europe.
Yeah, I think the estimate is about 10% of total seaborne oil trade passes through the Suez Canal, which connects the Red Sea and the Mediterranean Sea, right? And if not for that, they would have to go, as you both have mentioned, around the African continent to get there. So this is, I mean, it's going to be, I don't know how they're going to, it's going to be a logistical nightmare, right? As it is in December last year when e-commerce was booming, I'm pretty sure, unless I'm mistaken, Amazon had a hard time getting delivery times and delivery schedules to meet their expectations. And we're highlighting the difficulties, but also the complexities involved in this global world, in this globalized world that we have, that, you know, you can place an order here to buy a product from a US provider, but that product is made in China, right? So all the logistics in here have made it more complicated. And one, we've built a supply chain that relies on efficiency for cost reasons and all of that to make sure. And so when we've had a worst case scenario like this, I mean, no, it actually could be much worse than this. But when we have a situation like this where the canal is blocked, what's the backup plan there? And that's been the story for the last 12 months, right? What is the business contingency plan if something goes wrong for this or for that? And last year, I had a very interesting chat with Alexander Capri, who is based out of Singapore, and talked about how these global supply chains could start becoming more fragmented as we start prioritizing, regionalizing our supply chains because of issues just like this. So that'll be interesting to see, and also how long it takes to get this done. Because have you seen the tractors? The size, the scale of the tractors to the size of the ship? It's comical.
It is. And, you know, the important thing here is that the congestion now around this area, it's, I think at last count, it was just shy of 40 bulk carriers that are still waiting to pass through the Suez Canal. So this is currently holding up. I think estimates place it at 2 million barrels a day of oil flows. It's also affecting ships that ship products from wheat to iron ore. So this is certainly going to have a drastic impact on the flow of supply to other countries.
Yeah, in fact, a post-operator PSA may see schedule disruptions, and this is in Singapore, if the blockage continues. And this was from their transport minister. He made a statement on Thursday. So it's not something far-flung. It will affect us in the region as well, and possibly even the cost of the goods that we buy.
So let's also take a look very quickly at what's been happening in Japan, where, of course, the conversation, the everlasting conversation, it feels at this point, is the Tokyo 2020 Olympics. So it appears that the torch relay for the Olympics has finally gone underway starting yesterday. So it's the relay lasts 121 days. It usually signals the start of the build-up to this summer's games, which were, of course, postponed because of COVID-19. It was lit during a ceremony in Fukushima. So this will be carried by 10,000 runners across the country before lighting the Olympic cauldron, supposedly on the 23rd of July.
Unfortunately, it wouldn't be as lively as previous Olympics because in the past, thousands of people have lined up the streets for the event. But now with virus restrictions, the audience, they are banned from this year's launch ceremony. So everyone just has to watch it online. But I guess Tokyo 2020 chief Seiko Hashimoto said that she hopes that Olympic flame would serve as a ray of light at the end of the darkness.
I don't know about you, but every time you say Tokyo 2020, I get a bit of whiplash. I'm like, wait, what year is it again? Like, haven't we gone through this before? But yeah, it is. Let's see how they play it out, because Japan has put a lot of money behind the Tokyo 2020 Olympics, was banking on it, stimulating the economy, and that's on the back of people, basically tourists coming in. How much of that is it going to be realized this year? Well, that's anyone's guess.
Indeed. I think the Japanese government has already come out to say that it looks unlikely that there are going to be international tourists at this year's games, which is quite the blow to Japanese businesses. Something that we'll be keeping a close eye on, but right now we're about to head into some messages, and then we're looking at our own local papers and portals for the latest stories, so stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Road to Nowhere by The Talking Heads, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. We are your Talking Heads this morning, and we're looking at our local papers and portals to bring you what's happening here in the country. So, Noel, you've got the New Straits Times in front of you. What stands out to you there?
The headlines is on the front page, Extra Eyes and Policemen are going to be equipped with high-tech body-worn cameras. Those cameras are going to be mounted on their body with a government allocation of 30 million ringgit. And this is what this means is that they are able to record their work as they are interacting with people or, you know, trying to make an arrest. So all this, I think information collection is obviously good, right? So there is evidence that can be used by the police. So the thing is, if you're attempting to bribe a police, you might want to think again, because now they're going to be recording you. It's no longer going to be the other way around, where we used to record the police.
So, yes, I also have the Star in front of me, and their headline here is Help Wanted Badly. And this is about the government potentially allowing foreign domestic helpers back into the country. It's a call that has been raised by stakeholders, agencies, as well as families who are needing the help during this time. Also because, of course, a lot of children are still learning from home, at least a part of the time. And no one quite knows for certain how long that will continue. So in a lot of cases, at least one parent will have to stay at home with the children, which does make it difficult for families who rely on a dual income. If I turn the page, on page two of the Star, King wishes all cops happy 214th Police Day. So echoed here, happy 214th Police Day. Roshan, you have the Malaysian Reserve, I believe. What's on the front page of that paper?
On the front page, Langkawi tour operators want clarity on interstate travel for green zones. And I'm sure many other tour operators, holiday, travel-related businesses would want more clarity here. And they spoke with Langkawi Tourism Association CEO Zaidun Kadir to get his thoughts on the situation. Because Langkawi-based tourism players, which are currently surviving between, I think, 10 and 15% occupancy rates, they're urging the government to issue clearer guidelines. Because, well, 10 and 15% occupancy rates, there's only so long you can survive on that. But the more interesting story, of course, is on page 2. And that was that yesterday we heard that Undi 18 will only be implemented in September 2022. And this has come to, I think, the chagrin of many who supported the bill, including Undi 18, of course, the youth minister at the time, Syed Saddiq, who criticized the EC's excuse. He said that the EC should have had ample time to work on the mechanism and execution after the bill was passed in July 2019. That means at the end of all of this, if it even gets implemented in September 2022, that it would have been over 3 years since from the time it was passed to the implementation date. And of course, this is not just the voting of 18-year-olds or 20-year-olds, but also the automatic enrollment in the electoral roll.
Yeah, so the Star has this as well on page 5. This is also on the back of reports by the same paper. They reported recently that, while all systems are on track for initiatives like Undi 18 and the AVR to be rolled out, the EC is facing tremendous challenges in gazetting the new electoral roll after the expiry of the objection period. So EC Deputy Chairman Dr. Azmi Sharam said that gazetting the new voter rolls would be a necessary requirement with certain procedures to be followed before a person can vote, and pointed out that the legislation to enforce the AVR as well as lower the voting age to 18, that's out of the EC's hands.
Now, based on the latest EC records, the EC Chair, Abdul Ghani, has said that the number of citizens aged between 18 and above is about 5.6 million, of which 1.2 are between 18 and 20 years old. And he also said that 4.4 million individuals aged 21 and above, which means they're eligible to vote, but they are not registered as voters. So if you are above the age of 21 and you've not registered, I implore you, there are 4.4 million people who are eligible to vote who are not exercising their rights. Seriously, encourage you to go and do it. It's not that hard. Go to the post office and sort it out.
Yeah, so you can sway the outcomes of the elections, right?
4.4 is a lot of people.
Yeah, so just some COVID-19 updates here. Science, Technology and Innovation Minister Khairi Jamaluddin says that new groups or categories such as economic frontliners may be added to vaccine recipients in the second phase. Of course, this is still priority is still given to the elderly, but they are considering adding new categories of people to be prioritized for the vaccine jab.
Yes, the Star has also pulled together some of the report on the clusters that they've seen from the education sector so far, and that count is at 41. So these are clusters that have originated from schools and universities in total, resulting in over 2,200 positive cases so far. I think in his daily briefing, the Health Director General, Tan Sri Dr. Nur Hisham, said that 1,000 of those positive cases came from outbreaks at institutions of higher learning.
Something that caught my attention on Malaysia Kini, Noel, your old friend, Dr. Mahathir, was in the news, and he's basically trying to position Pejuang as a third force kingmakers of sorts, and said that they will...
Firstly, they need to register their party.
Yes, but they can still run, right? They can still run as independents and then put their support, him and all four other MPs in his coalition, in his group there, can throw their support behind, they're open to any coalition as long as they meet certain conditions.
Hey, you know, four MPs doesn't sound like a lot, but with our parliament hanging by a thread, it could well be enough to make a difference. We'll have to wait and see on that note, and we'll be, of course, bringing you updates on the subject. But right now, we're about to head into the 7 o'clock news bulletin, and then we're bringing you more business news and analysis. But first, some music. Here's Think by Aretha Franklin, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.